This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mom and Dad Are Fighting is brought to you by BullandBranch.com, offering luxury bedding at affordable prices. Order right now and they'll give you 20% off, plus free shipping. Get sheets, towels, blankets, duvet covers, and more at BullandBranch.com. That's BullandBranch.com. And use the promo code Mom and Dad. And by Little Passports. Inspire your kids to learn about the world with a subscription to Little Passports. Mom and Dad Are Fighting listeners can save 40% on their first month today with the promo code Mom and Dad. Learn more at littlepassports.com/momanddad. And by Green Chef, a new food delivery service that makes cooking easy with consciously sourced healthy recipes and organic ingredients. Get 4 free meals with your first order when you go to greenchef.com/momanddad.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello and welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for April 28th, 2016, the Mothers and Meddlers edition. I'm Dan Coyce. I'm an editor at Slate and the dad of Harper, who is 8, and Lyra, who turns 11 on Friday.
Happy almost birthday, Lyra.
Yay!
I'm Allison Benedict, also an editor at Slate and the mom of Harry, 7, Sam, 5, and Wally, 3.
Hi, Allison. Happy almost Mother's Day.
Thank you.
We're in the same room today in Slate's Brooklyn offices. It's very, very exciting. On today's show, we are celebrating moms of all stripes. We're talking to Susan Sarandon about her new movie about a mom and her adult daughter, The Meddler. We're getting great mom and kid stories from Slate writers and editors, and we've got a listener call from a stepmom with questions about her relationship with her stepson. Plus, triumphs, fails, recommendations, everything you want to hear from us. Allison, I believe first, you have some important announcements. As a mom, you have the floor.
Yes, you should listen to me as a mom. As you guys know, we'd like you to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/momanddadarefighting. It is super easy to do. It makes a big difference for the show. But I will say no more because I feel that Dan has gotten to the point of desperation in his requests, and I don't want to, I want to distance myself from that.
It's really embarrassing, honestly.
Yeah. But I did want to suggest, if you wanted to plug us on a Facebook moms group or a Facebook parents group or a Facebook neighborhood group that you belong to, I wouldn't discourage you from doing that.
No, or really any Facebook group, like a Facebook group of Doctor Who fans or just whatever Facebook group you belong to.
Right.
Let them know about the show.
Facebook.com/momanddadarefighting.
All right. Triumphs and fails. First off, before we start, I want to thank everyone who posted on that Facebook page or emailed us about our fails last episode. So many people had really amazing ideas for how I could deal with our sock surplus, from making a game out of it with the kids to paying Lyra to sort them to just throwing them all away and just buying everyone black socks and not worrying about it anymore.
What did you do?
I haven't done anything. The socks are still in a bin on top of my dryer. Our neighbor actually even texted me begging to just come over and do all the socks for us because it drove her so crazy. So now I like have incentive to keep driving Ashley crazy by never doing the socks.
Just let her come over.
No. That would be way more humiliating than announcing to everyone who listens to this podcast that I can't fold socks.
It was weird how much mail we got. It was like Rick Moranis socks.
Yes.
Those are like our big hits.
Also, hats off to the lady who called us telling Allison that Harry was going to turn into a mansplainer when he grew up. That was my favorite phone call we've ever received. Also, she's right. All right. And another exciting announcement. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is looking for an intern. We are open to applications from anyone to help us out making our show, but we really think this might be a perfect job for a parent, a mom or a dad with a little bit of extra time on his or her hands who's looking for something fun to do, who loves the show and is interested in all these ideas. You'd help us come up with show topics, you'd do a little bit of research for us, and you'd help us think of really great guests to talk to on the show. We would love your help. If you are interested, send us an email at momanddad@slate.com and tell us why why you would be the perfect intern for the show. You would even get paid an embarrassingly small amount of money. All right. Allison, do you have a triumph or a fail this week?
I have a triumph, and it is directly related to something we talked about on a previous show. I mentioned at some point that we had never done a trip that was totally geared toward the kids, planned for and focused on the kids. And you, Dan, encouraged me to do this. And your encouragement, plus some other factors like time and money and convenience, led us to take the boys to an indoor water park.
So the actual Great Wolf Lodge or some kind of Great Wolf Lodge knockoff?
It's apparently a newer, better Great Wolf Lodge.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they say. What happened was really that I was like desperately searching for something to do with the kids for like a few days that wasn't too expensive, that was in driving distance, that was fun for them. I compiled a list for John. I could never get his attention to make a decision. And then I had a little minor surgery. And when I went under, as they were like wheeling me out, I turned to him and I said, when I wake up, you better fucking have booked a spring break trip. And he did. And amazingly, I think because it was the cheapest one, yeah, he picked this indoor water park. And it was great. It was gross and I would never go back. But early on, I texted a friend saying, like, this place is not our speed. And she wrote back, don't kid yourself. That place is no one's speed. It's not for you.
Right.
And after that, I was like, okay,
yeah,
that's very true. Good point, friend. And we threw ourselves into it, or I did. And John did, too. I think it was a little bit harder for John. But yeah, we had so much fun. It's really fun to watch the kids just like, wait, like we get to go on the water slides at 10 at night when we're supposed to be asleep. And
right.
Like the vending machines and just all of the like crap that seems just like crappity crappy to me is amazing to them.
It's unbelievably exciting to
yeah.
them. And why are you kidding yourself? You would totally go back for them. You would go back and do that for them because they love it so much.
I wouldn't go back to that place.
You go to Great Wolf Lodge,
No.
Older, more inferior version.
No, yeah, I don't know. But it was great. So thanks. Thanks for the encouragement.
Good triumph.
Thanks. What do you have?
I also have a triumph, which is that it seems like maybe our positive opposites challenge is kind of paying off. So remember last episode, we talked about the Kasdan positive acknowledgement method of behavioral training, where you don't punish a kid for doing something wrong. You praise them for doing something right before they ever get a chance to do the thing wrong. And on Facebook, I declared that we were going to attempt to use this method to get Lyra to eat with a fucking fork.
Yes.
As opposed to just using her hands for everything and smearing shit all over the place. And so we really have been doing that for like 2 weeks now. We've been, you know, each time she like eats politely at the table, where we like sort of over the top congratulate her, thank her, tell her how she's really contributing to making dinner nicer for everyone. And like she really is like rolling her eyes now when we do this because we're like so over the top. But it also, she's doing it more. Like,
and when she's not doing it, you're just not saying anything?
We just don't say it. We just like let it go.
Yeah.
And it like it's totally working, or at least it worked last night. We had dinner. That whole dinner, she ate with her fork, even though her attention was mostly elsewhere. But she sort of just habitually ate with a fork, and she didn't like reach her fucking dirty hands in the food yeah. and shove it in her face once. It was kind of remarkable. I assume that the next time I eat with her, she'll like stick her face in the food like a pig at a trough. But still, it still seemed like great. So hey, point to Kasdan.
Did you ever look into when you talked about this, and I also mentioned that Harry doesn't like to use utensils. A couple of people wrote us and said like that's a possibly it's not about like defiance, but it's about an inability to actually hold the
like motor skills.
Yeah. Did you ever do anything about that?
No, her motor skills are fine, as evidenced by her ability to type passwords into computers.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that she's fine on that front. All right. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is brought to you by BowlandBranch.com. Beds are important. Beds are where you spend a third of your life, and less than that if you have a new baby, more than that if you are a teenager. But shouldn't your bed be comfortable? At BowlandBranch.com, you know you're paying for quality sheets and a comfortable bed experience, not department store overhead. You're getting amazingly luxurious fair trade sheets for just a couple $100. So go online to Bowl, that's B-O-L-L, like a cotton bowl, and branch.com, and they will let you try their sheets risk-free for 30 nights. Mom and Dad Are Fighting listeners get 20% off your entire order. Sheets, towels, blankets, duvet covers, everything, plus free shipping, plus a 30-day risk-free return. So go to BowlandBranch.com today for 20% off your entire order. Use promo code MOMANDDAD. BowlandBranch.com, promo code MOMANDDAD.
Despite the fact that Mother's Day is still 10 days away due to the schedule of our podcast, which is every other week, this show, as Dan said, is our Mother's Day episode. So everyone, Dan, take a moment to get in the right headspace for Mother's Day. Think about your mom. Think about your spouse if she is a mom. Think about being a mom if you are a mom. Okay, so to celebrate this holiday that creeps up on John every year, we've asked a bunch of Slate staffers to come in and tell us stories about their moms. And later in our Slate Plus segment, Dan and I will tell our own moving, inspirational, hilarious stories. And we hope you'll share some of yours on our Facebook page or over email, and we will read some of our favorites from you guys on the next episode.
And we'll also explain how John finally got Mother's Day right because Allison made him listen to the podcast, and then he said, oh, right, right, Mother's Day.
We're going to celebrate Mother's Day the same day that we register Sam for kindergarten.
All right. Who are we starting out with?
Okay. So first up is our producer, Anne.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi. So you want a story about Donna?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Donna is my mom. I've started calling her Donna. It was a suggestion from a friend of mine where, like, if maybe in the past you've had kind of a conflicted relationship with your mom, if you call her by her first name to yourself, it kind of makes it like, oh, Donna's really fun. Like, Donna goes to Ireland all the time. Donna tries weed for her 65th birthday.
It's like she's a whole different person.
She's a whole different person.
No relationship to the mom who wants to annoy you.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one thing I highly recommend. But my favorite story of my mom, and this was that on her 65th birthday, my mom decided that she was going to try marijuana for the first time. She was an only child. Her father died when she was 5. She basically had to kind of raise her mother, became a legal guardian. And so she really didn't ever get a chance to kind of be wild or do anything wild. So she thought, like, on her 65th birthday, she was going to be crazy. So she was asking all of her kids and saying, like, hey, have you heard of this thing? It's called a one-hit wonder. and I'm like, yes, Mom, I don't know. But we did caution her to say, Mom, you should be a little careful because we've had panic attacks on marijuana. You may have a panic attack on marijuana. And she's like, okay, fine. So my mom has her trainer and his boyfriend, and they decide that they're going to give her a brownie and then take her out to dinner. So.
You're setting this up a lot, but it went great, right? It totally went great.
No, great. Okay, so Donna eats part of the brownie. They go out to dinner, and according to Donna, she's sitting at the table, and all of a sudden, like, she just says to herself, I need to go. Like, I need to leave. And so they take her outside, but they haven't paid for anything. So her friend Rob leaves her holding a lamppost. So she's in the parking lot grabbing a lamppost.
This is a straight up scene out of a romantic comedy.
Yeah. It proceeds to get worse. So then they decide to drive her home. Get into the garage, open the door. She immediately vomits on the garage floor. She ends up being fine. They let her go. The guys are like, we're never going to do this for your birthday ever again.
And is the happy ending of the story that she is now the biggest weed dealer in her town?
No, but she kept a part of that brownie. It's in her freezer. And she has told us that she wants to be cremated with it.
What?
That's
yes.
Totally adorable.
And then we have to throw her ashes off the cliff some more.
I love your mom's spirit of adventure. I love that Donna can look back on that story and laugh. And also, I love that that's what she's doing with that brownie. That's absurd.
Yeah, so that's Donna.
Has your mom smoked weed?
No, we actually discussed this. I went with my mom and my brother this past weekend to the Grand Canyon because she had never been, and she asked for us to take her for her 70th birthday. And she was discussing how she has never smoked weed, and I was like, Mom, you definitely should smoke some weed. Like, yeah, I bet you would love it, actually. I don't think she would have a panic attack. I think she would be, like, super mellow. But she is very nervous because it's illegal. All right, thank you, Anne.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Anne.
All right, thanks, Donna.
Myra's definitely not smoked weed, right?
Oh, no, she has.
Oh, good.
Her story, I don't know if I buy it, is that the last time she smoked weed was when my sister and I were sleeping upstairs in their house, and she thought, like, what am I doing? I'm endangering my children. I can't do this anymore. For all I know, I think some of her friends smoke it now for health, so she might be back at it again.
I hope so. Myra, if you're listening, spark one up for me.
Okay, next up we have Leon Nafak, a staff writer at Slate.
Hey, Leon.
Hi.
So tell us an endearing story of your mother, please.
Okay, so last summer I had a book come out.
It's very good.
Thank you.
It's called The Next Level. I liked it a lot.
Thank you, Dan.
Sure. This entire story is just a promotional marketing scheme.
Thanks, Leon. Talk to you next time.
The book is about a rapper named Juicebox and my friendship with him when he moved to New York. He was someone I knew growing up and sort of came back into my life when I became an adult. My mom read some of the early reviews of the book and was very concerned that they had gotten it all wrong and that this would result in people who might want to read the book thinking that it was not for them. The mistake that these reviews made, according to my mom, was that they thought they took Juicebox, the subject of the book, too seriously, or they thought that the book was really supposed to be just about him, when in fact, in her opinion, it was really all about me.
Sure, the book was about Leon Neyfakh.
She's not the only person who has had this interpretation. I'll leave it at that.
Also, your cousins.
So having this concern, did she just tell you, Leon, don't pay any attention to those reviews? The book's really about you, or did she?
No, she had a plan. Her plan was to write her own review of the book and post it. I think she said she wanted to post it on Facebook and Amazon until I convinced her not to. However, the review that she wrote is wonderful, and I really, really cherish it. And I'm really glad she wrote it, even though it never
so she emailed it. She emailed it to you and said, I'm going to post this on Facebook, and you talked her down.
Yeah, I said, you know, that's probably not going to.
Have you told her, Mom, this review you wrote of my book is wonderful, and I love it, and I love you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, good. Good.
She didn't take it as a slight that I didn't want her to publish it anywhere.
Sure. I think moms sometimes know we're protecting them from themselves.
Would you not have wanted her to publish it under someone else's name?
And, well, I don't know. You guys can be the judge as to whether it's obvious that it was written by the author's mother. Maybe it's not that obvious. I think it's obvious, if only because it's written in somewhat broken English is like way too strong a word for what this is. But she, like me, is Russian. English is her second language. So there are like articles missing and such.
It keeps referring to handsome author Leon Neyfakh. I love that story. Let's hear a selection from your mother's review of The Next Level.
Okay. Several published reviews of the book Next Level by Leon Neyfakh will most likely stop some people from reading it. It upsets me, so I decided to write my own. This book is not about rap. It's not even meant for people who like rap. It's a book about falling in love with something not really worthy, but maybe understanding that and yet being absolutely not able to do anything about it. A boy admires a teenage musician for his passion for rap, ecstatic shows, and idea of escaping routine. Boys do it, but this love does not go away. It stays hidden through the years, and when suddenly the rapper shows up in New York, where the narrator lives his normal adult life, it hits him again, hard. It doesn't matter that nobody likes this guy, that his lyrics are senseless and plain, and the name Juicebox is completely idiotic.
We like your mom. We're pro.
Your mom is great.
Can I just read the last
yes.
paragraph?
Yeah.
It's a genuine book, and all the emotions and all the little details are real. As for the idea, it's old, but it never gets outdated. There's no such thing as miserable or shameful love.
We'll have a link to buy The Next Level by handsome author yes. Leon Neyfakh on our show page and on facebook.com/momanddadarefighting. That's an adorable story. Thank you, Leon.
Thank you for having me.
Bye. Next up, we have Slate's fabulous writer and editor, Laura Anderson, LV Anderson, to those in the know. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Welcome. I'm great. Tell us a delightful story about your delightful mother.
Well, my mom is just great in general. She's like taken care of me when I have been sick as an adult. She went to Paris with me last year for vacation. We like talk about everything. She's just like an A+ mom all around. But my favorite memory of her is from about 10 years ago when I came home from college for Christmas break, and it was shortly after SNL had aired Dick in a Box, the famous sketch
in which
Justin Timberlake and Andy Samberg sing about their dicks being in boxes.
As the perfect Christmas present for their booze, yes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so I guess, I mean, I don't know if this is really that funny to people who don't know her, but my mom is like, she doesn't have that much patience for like sexist humor or for like scatological humor. She has like a pretty like high bar for what she finds funny, but I come home from college and she's like watching Dick in a Box on her computer and just like laughing so hard that like tears are streaming down her cheeks. And so we spent all of that vacation just like rewatching Dick in a Box as a family. And she said that she loved it so much because like these men are just so oblivious, but they're trying so hard to like be sweet to their girlfriends.
That's
so
such a charitable reading of that video.
She saw the best in those characters.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope that even today you can say to your mom, step one, and she'll know what comes next.
all I heard in your story was that you were in college when Dick in a Box appeared on Saturday Night Live.
Let's not dwell on that, shall we? Thank you, Laura Anderson. Happy Mother's Day to your mother. She sounds amazing.
Thank you. Happy Mother's Day to your mothers as well, and to you, Allison.
Thank you. All right. Next up is Catherine Weinkoop, a sales planner for Panoply, who actually sells ads for this very show.
Thank you very much, by the way, for keeping us in business.
Oh, anytime.
And welcome. So tell us an endearing story about your endearing mom.
Absolutely. So my mom was actually one of the first 200 women that were hired by the FBI. And she was also the first woman to ever be inducted into the Honor Legion.
Whoa.
Yeah, she's so impressive. But it was actually a miracle that she even heard about the FBI opening. She was actually recruiting at Winston-Salem State University for Wachovia. And the...
That's a real North Carolina line, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So the booth next to her was an FBI recruiter, and they recruited her.
They recruited the recruiter next door.
Exactly.
They
were like, the start of a great movie.
That is. That's like the meet cute at the beginning of a spy movie that ends with them facing each other, like facing off with guns drawn.
Exactly.
So that's amazing. What did she, I mean, what was her beat? What did she handle while she was there?
She was a bank robbery squad agent in New York City. Originally, she was working in Charlotte, but then she got transferred up to New York and just ran the show.
So tell, because you told me a little bit of this story. So tell me why you, it's awesome that your mom like had this groundbreaking FBI role, but the real reason you want to tell the story is?
So first of all, she was so involved in her job to the point where when she was pregnant with me, she went on a few arrests without her bulletproof vest because it wouldn't fit around her newly engorged belly.
They don't make maternity bulletproof vests.
Apparently not. Yeah. And so she was planning on returning back to complete active duty once her maternity leave ended. But then the second I was born, just her whole life flipped upside down, which I assume many mothers experience. And I'm just so incredibly proud of her and humbled by the fact that she did make that sacrifice for me. She had been in the FBI for 12 years, and once you hit the 20-year mark, you're just completely taken care of for life.
Yeah.
And so I know that there were some struggles of hers kind of later in life regretting the decision a little bit. But then at the end of it, she let me know that she really loved every second that she spent with me, and she was so happy that she didn't go back into the FBI, especially with the September 11th attacks.
Yeah.
She would have just been completely gone the whole time. And she went on every single field trip with me, like literally every single one, to the point when I was in eighth grade, I finally realized that I was a loser for that. And I was like, Mom, maybe you shouldn't go. But yeah, she was always there for me, and I'm just so glad that she, I don't know, made that decision.
That is truly amazing on both fronts.
Yeah.
That is a great story. Thank you so much, Catherine.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Catherine.
All right. Next up is Slate's video producer, Ayman Ismail. Hello.
Hi.
So tell us, please, an endearing story about your endearing mother.
Yeah. You know, as any first generation American will tell you, you know, if you grow up in the States, you sort of have two identities. You have one where your friends are outside in school or wherever, and you have one in your home.
Right.
And for me, that was Egypt. And so in Egypt, like, meals are a big deal. And I just got used to having like these huge feasts for breakfast, lunch, dinner, no matter what. So she'd pull out these huge pots of food, and every day was my favorite dish because every dish was insane. And when it came time to go to college, you know, somebody who never cooks, I was like, well, I can't like just leave this behind to become full-fledged American. I'm not ready for that.
You were not willing to just go to the dining hall and eat Lucky Charms.
The cereal bar.
Yeah.
No, that is not going to cut it for me.
Okay.
I need these huge meals that are going to be able to, you know, fill me up and make me ready for the classes that I never went to. But so I kind of asked my mom, hey, could you just like teach me how to make these meals? And she tried to, but, you know, there's like no way to measure how she makes these things. She's like eyeballing everything.
Right.
Kind of just reaching into her back pocket and just throwing whatever she can into the pot.
Right. There's not recipes. There's a lifetime of cooking experience that makes these things.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm sure it like it's blood transmitted, not even through whatever. It's insane.
Yeah.
So I asked her to teach me how to make these meals, and it was just not going to happen. So I ended up pulling out my video camera, and I was just recording what I could.
Just so recording her cooking so you could then play it back later and model your actions after her. Did that work?
No. No matter what I did, it was never going to come out anywhere near as good as she did. And she would like, she taught me how to make all my favorite dishes, like the lemon chicken that she made and all these other Egyptian dishes like mulcheya, it's pretty easy to make. But when it came to the thing that I really wanted to make is this dish called goulash. It's like this meat pastry kind of dish, my favorite. Mm-hmm. She refused.
She refused to teach you.
She was like, no way. I'm like, why? And I'm never going to forget this. She looked me right in the eye. She was like, if I taught you how to make that dish, you'll never have a reason to come home again.
Oh.
And that kind of broke my heart. And she understates it, you know.
And then in soundcheck, we asked Eamon what he eat for breakfast, and he said, I'm not really a breakfast kind of guy.
I had an apple.
How far you have fallen.
Oh, God.
I'm like 26 now. I have a beard. It's not the same.
Oh, man. Well, I cannot wait to have your mom cook for the entire Slate office sometime.
I'll tell her it's just for me, and it'll be enough.
That's right.
Yeah, that's perfect.
All right. Thank you so much, Eamon. That's a great story.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks.
Thanks, Allison.
All right, next up we have Slate's counsel, Ava Lubell. Hey.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Hey.
Good. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So please tell us an endearing story about your endearing mother.
An endearing story about, I have many endearing stories, but the one I would like to share with you today happened only a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I have the best job in the world, but sometimes it gets a little busy, and I was having a busy period recently, and there was a problem with one of my prescription drugs, and anyone who's ever dealt with an insurance company knows that it is a pain you would not wish upon your children.
Right.
And my highly sympathetic mother took it upon herself to engage with the insurance company on my behalf.
Wow.
If that's not love, I really don't know what is.
Wait, so she just called the insurance company and was like, I'm Ava's mom.
Ava's mother.
That's actually not quite what happened. And this is where it gets into the wacky and endearing part of it.
Uh-huh.
She called, I think, in an information-seeking capacity, and before long was impersonating me to Slate's insurance company. Yeah, so that was impressive. And how did I find this out? I assume
she called you and told you.
Yeah, no, that's not what happened. Oh. She's much more dramatic. She's got some flair. I get a call from someone asking me my date of birth and a number of questions, and it's from my insurance company, and I'm a little confused, and they, ma'am, do you not remember the phone call we were just on? And I quickly realized what she had done.
You so instantly put it together. That says a lot about your relationship with your mom.
Well, she knew that I was like annoyed with them, and she's like, oh, that's horrible. So I quickly put it together, and I kind of try and fake around, and eventually it's just so obvious. I have no idea what she's talking about. So I was like, again, she's like, ma'am, do you have no recollection of our conversation? And I just like, oh, God, mom, what did you do? And basically the person just hung up on me, and I'm sure I'm flagged as like a person of interest.
But
I call my mom and I'm like, thanks, what did you do?
And what did she say? She said, I was just helping.
She's like, I know you're so busy right now. You're working so hard. And I thought I could help out. And, you know, I don't know how people deal with these insurance companies. They're so difficult. And the thing was, while thinking she was totally bonkers, because this is a bonkers thing to do, it was actually the sweetest thing ever.
Yeah.
Because having to deal with them, ugh, my God.
Thank you.
Also, like, incredible attention to detail, right? My mom does that when sometimes I'm talking, I'm just like venting to her, and she writes things down. So, like, your mom was like, Aetna. Like, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Right.
You know, like.
Right. Holdings Company. That is amazing. And you're right that is like, that she would do that for you. That's like several steps above taking a bullet for you, honestly.
Really how I feel. Yeah. And, you know, I'm like, I'm an adult at this point. I should really be handling my insurance on my own.
We agree.
Yeah. But
thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ava.
As long as your mom is not like calling people up and be like, I'm going to negotiate this contract on behalf of Slate.com.
You guys might
the
get
company where
results.
I am the counsel.
She did ask us to have you on the podcast because she thinks you know, deserve the spotlight.
My mother's actually a retired lawyer. She might do better work than I do.
Oh,
who knows?
Wow. That's exciting that we have that in our back pocket if we need it. Thank you so much, Ava.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Thanks. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
Mom and Dad Are Fighting is brought to you by Little Passports. Inspire your kids to learn about the world with Little Passports. This award-winning educational subscription sends you monthly packages in the mail, each featuring a new country or world theme. Packages are addressed to your child and are filled with letters, souvenirs, stickers, activities, and more. It's a fun way for kids to learn about geography and cultures around the globe. A recent hit in our house was the Egypt package for Sam, which included a pyramid made of, I don't really know what material.
It's like loosely bound together sand that's just hard enough to, for them to then chisel away.
Right, with like a little golden pharaoh toy inside of it. So you got this also, and some tools to scrape away at the pyramid to get to the guy. And it made a massive mess in our kitchen. And Sam actually had like, it was like, we had to do it together. But he thought he was like really strong.
I think you mean you got to do it together.
We got to do it together. Thank you. It was great, though. He loved it. So great interactive thing in your Egypt package, little passports. And it was well timed for Passover. Mom and Dad Are Fighting listeners can save 40% on their first month today with the code MOMANDDAD. So learn more and take a peek inside the monthly packages at littlepassports.com/momanddad.
All right, now it's time for our listener call. If you have got a dilemma you want us to discuss on the air, give us a call at 424-255-7833. That's 424-255-RUDE. Okay, today's call is from Shayna. Take it away.
I'm calling with a question about the limits of step-parenting. I have a stepson who's 13, and I've been in his life full-time since he was 7. My son doesn't have a ton of friends. He has a pretty eccentric personality, but he has a couple of friends with some girls on the corner. And last fall, their mother called me saying, "We think your son, my stepson, stole the key out of our little lockbox." And then I asked my husband to deal with it. You know, there's a limit of you're a stepmom and you do this and this and this in his life, but then there's a point when it has to be his dad who deals with things like that with him. But now we have warm weather, and I've just learned from those friends that he's not allowed to play at their house, but they've been playing at my house all day. And it would be nice to have it be a little bit of back and forth. And I'm now thinking, okay, I just called the mother again. She didn't pick up, and I left a slightly terse voicemail. And then the minute I hung up, I thought I should have had my husband do that. But will he do it? And it seems like I'm the one who's dealing with it because I see the kids more regularly. I have part-time, he has full-time work. So this is a little long-winded, but I'm basically putting it out there of, in principle, I think it's better to let my stepson's father deal with some of these prickly issues, but maybe it should be me. So I'm totally at a loss and feeling a weird kind of confusion and regret.
All right, so that's a very interesting call. Joining us to discuss it is Slate video editor Jessamine Molly. Jessamine, you're a stepdaughter, right?
Yes.
And when did your stepmom come into your life?
Around when I want to say 3 or 4.
Okay.
My dad and my stepmom got married around when I was 5, as well as my mom and my stepdad.
Okay. So did you later on, you know, when you were 11 or 12, as the stepson is in this call, did you feel innately that there were some boundaries that step-parents shouldn't cross, or did you get the sense that they were basically equal partners in parenting?
It's a little complicated for me, only because I had all 4 of my parents very present, which is great, and I consider them my 4 parents. And I grew up equally in both households, so I sort of had them all around all the time, mm-hmm. and there was my mom and dad were both very accessible. But I think that my relationship with my step-parents was very much cultivated by them and sort of how they decided to build it. So, yes, there are definitely differences, mm-hmm. but it was based on sort of how they decided to build it.
So you found that if a step-parent sort of took authority in a certain circumstance, you would accept that, or you wouldn't like rebel just because they weren't your real mom.
You would relate to it as a kid would relate to a biological parent.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And based mostly on the relationship they decided to build over those years, sort of it's your natural response. You're not always thinking step when you're thinking parent.
Right.
I mean, that's my reaction to this caller, which is that like at a certain point, it shouldn't just be your husband's job to step in. I mean, I can certainly understand wanting him, any co-parent, you know, any spouse or a parent to play a significant role in all of these issues, and it shouldn't just be left to the mom or the stepmom. But in terms of like you feeling like you have to defer or should defer to him because you're the stepmom instead of the real mom, I don't think that's healthy for you, for the family, or for the child, or for the neighborhood.
I think it's real. I mean, I'm sure that it is difficult in many ways being a step parent and worrying about the bounds of your authority and worrying about overstepping them. But I also think that that kid right now does not need a parent who's like too busy to do anything about it, and one parent who's too worried about the limits of her authority. He needs someone to like go help with this situation that he is maybe or maybe not gotten himself in. And I really think, Shayna, that you should feel empowered and able to be the parent in this situation. This kid has been with you almost half of his life. You are a real mom to him, and it's okay for you to act like that and seize that opportunity and go over to that house and, you know, go to the mom's house with a peace offering and talk it out with her and tell her how important this friendship is to your son and how you really want to make sure that it's fostered and grows as opposed to her like still feeling threatened or nervous about him.
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, you always have the right to advocate for your family, and he's really a part of your family. You chose that when you married your husband, which is a great thing to bring this other person into your life in that way, and continuing to treat family like family is there's no really wrong way to do that, and you're not going to overstep.
Yeah, that's a really great point.
That's great. Yeah.
Should we talk about the dad? That guy needs to like fucking step up also, right? Is that crazy?
I mean, without hearing from him.
Okay, okay. All right, so.
No, I mean, I do think, though, if you're feeling unsure of your position enough to call us, which we're glad that you did, it is worth not just, like, asserting, you know, just go and assert yourself, Shayna, but, like, you should talk to your husband about it. Like, he should know that you're feeling these conflicts, and it's, like, it's a family issue. It's not just, like, a you alone issue.
All right, thank you so much, Jessamyn.
Sure, no problem.
If you have a question that you want us to answer on the air, or if you are Shayna's husband and you want to defend yourself, give us a call, 424-255-7833. That's 424-255. Rude. Moving on. The new indie film The Meddler is now open in select cities and opening wider as we come up to Mother's Day. It is a totally delightful little comedy drama. It's written and directed by Laureen Scafaria, and it stars Susan Sarandon as a recently widowed transplant to LA and Rose Byrne as the daughter whose life she just can't stop meddling with. I really liked it a lot, and last week I was very excited while Allison was on vacation. I got to call Susan Sarandon to talk about it.
I was a little annoyed.
Tough luck. You were having a great time at the water park. And I got to talk to Susan Sarandon. We're best friends now. But anyways, here's the interview. Joining me on the phone now is the great Susan Sarandon, who's the star of The Meddler. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining me. So those of us with moms who can be meddlers sometimes, thank you very much for bringing this character to life. But we are also a little bit scared of her.
Well, I'm finding out that seems like everyone has a mother that meddles. I mean, I think it's just varying degrees. I feel as a mom with children, it's my job to be a bit of a meddler, and they meddle with my life.
Sure. Why do you think it is that when you're an adult and when your mom has something she wants to say to you about your life, why is it sometimes so hard to, like, accept that?
You know, there's a certain point where kids have to understand that their parents existed before they did, and where parents have to understand that these kids are, you know, specific people who may not be the people that you thought they were when they were 10.
Yeah.
That they may have changed, and even siblings have to get to reestablish their relationship, and that younger brother that was so annoying may now be a very responsible grown man, you know. And I think that we have so much baggage left over from our childhood and those relationships and the labels that parents put on their kids, that you have to look afresh and really listen. And sometimes that's hard. I remember my daughter, when my son was born, she was so enthusiastic. And then after about 2 years, you know, when he wasn't a doll anymore and he wasn't doing what she wanted, she started to really want to send him back. And I tried to explain to him, and he said, her don't know what her job is anymore. And I thought that was so astute, because that's exactly what happened. They had to realign their jobs or their relationship to each other. And, you know, that's what we have to do constantly. And sometimes as a mom, your just general anxiety about keeping your kids safe, and you want there to be a future for your child, and you go to the things that spelled safety to you and future to you, which is not necessarily right for your kid.
Yeah, you're right that we are constantly like reinventing this relationship with each other and figuring out, reminding ourselves that they're not the person they once were.
One of the things that's interesting about this movie is that Laurie, the character played by Rose Byrne, your daughter in this movie, is having such a hard time in her life. And it's a time when she really could use her mother's advice. There are times when we're doing fine and we don't need our adult mothers. But Laurie really could use it.
But I think, you know, you have to make mistakes. It's really important to, you don't move on to the next level just because somebody told you this is what you have to do. You have to get to the point where you feel this is what you have to do, because what you have to do is sometimes incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
And anybody, if you've had a girlfriend that keeps coming to you for advice about this terrible boyfriend and you keep telling her and she doesn't leave and she doesn't change and nothing changes, you know, it's because she's not ready to hear it. So you can be there, I think, for someone to reassure them that they are worth being loved, that they can always come to you, that you will always love them. And that's what a mom does. As I say in the movie, you know, moms love unconditionally. Sometimes dads have to say it, but, you know, to give your kid a safe place and everything. But I think sometimes I have to watch my kids making mistakes. If it's really a life-altering mistake that's going to change the course of their options in the future, you know, I'll speak up. But sometimes they, you know, they just have to figure it out for themselves, and you have to have the confidence that they can.
That seems so hard, though. It seems so hard to watch them make those mistakes.
So hard.
Yeah.
So hard.
There are a lot of great scenes in the movie of Marnie leaving voicemails for Laurie. That's sort of the voiceover structure of the movie is that. So anyway, are you a voicemail leaver for your kids?
Yeah, I do. I do a bit, but not really voicemails, because I know they'll never listen to them.
Right.
So I text. I learn to text, and I do text. And I sometimes will just say, I'm thinking of you, and other times I'll send them. I'm very big on sending things that I find online, you know, articles or funny things or videos or whatever, and they do the same for me. So I'll send them on. I don't know how many of them they actually watch, but it's a way of staying connected and say, I'm thinking of you. And sometimes I just say, I'm thinking of you. But I don't, if I do, I say, you don't have to get back to me. You know, I'm just checking in. Luckily, my life has a little bit more going on than Marnie's.
Yeah, though, so she gets there. She gets there by the end.
Yeah.
May I ask, is your mother still alive?
My mom just turned 93 today.
Oh, my goodness. Happy birthday to her. What's your relationship with her like now, and has it changed a lot over the years?
Well, I'm the oldest of nine, so there was really no time for my mom to be arriving at my doorstep with bagels. You know, that was not part of the deal. And I think that when everybody grew up and left, she was very happy to have her own life, and she moved and she left my dad, and she was trying to make the life that she really hadn't had an opportunity to have when mm-hmm. she was having all these kids, and she was in New Jersey raising them. So it wasn't the same. I mean, I check in with her now, but she's not someone who calls. She doesn't call at all, so you have to call her.
One thing that I just like the most about this movie is that we see all these moments when Marnie's meddling causes problems, right? When she gets it wrong or she screws things up. But we also really see moments when it works out, when she really does help people. And I think it's hard for children to admit sometimes that our mothers can be right. Sometimes they are right.
Well, I tend to frame it whether it works or it doesn't work instead of having to worry about if it's right or wrong. I think that the complaint that's lodged against her meddling in strangers' lives and doing things that are really beautiful is just that, is she doing this to avoid her own loneliness? And who cares, is my feeling. I mean, I would definitely recommend volunteer work to any recently divorced woman or widowed woman or someone who's sitting there glued to the TV as a better option than, you know, this emptiness of being completely self-centered. And plus, when you do volunteer, you meet the greatest people, and you also are moved by, you know, that impulse to make a difference. I think it's a beautiful world of volunteering. So, you know, does she know the last name of the gal whose wedding she's given? No, and that is a funny thing. But I don't know that, you know, that's a horrible thing. So I think that, you know, what sometimes they're afraid of is that you're not dealing with your own issues.
Yeah, she's got so much love to give. She can't remember everyone's last name. Yeah.
Yeah, and she really, that character, that woman really is like that. And she's just got a big heart, and she, you know, is very open to people that she doesn't know. And I kind of like that. And I'm a person that definitely is interested in talking to strangers, and I hear their stories. And I understand that impulse. So I wasn't judgmental at all about what she was doing. I found it, you know, really lovely.
Well, those of us with moms who just talk to strangers all the time, mortifying us. Thank you for this sympathetic portrait. The movie is called The Meddler. It's really great. When this show airs, it'll already be open in a few cities, and it's opening wide in the coming weeks. Thank you so much, Susan.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Hey, this is Dan back in the studio with Allison. Thank you so much to Susan Sarandon. Once again, that movie is The Meddler. Susan Sarandon, Rose Byrne, and also, finally, a movie employs J.K. Simmons as the lust object he was born to be. It's super cute. It's really fun. See it with your mom. It's out now. All right, moving on. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is brought to you by Green Chef. It's spring, which means it is time to celebrate nature, to be active, and to eat healthy, delicious food. And you can get a little bit of help with that last part with Green Chef, a new food delivery service that makes cooking at home easy with their consciously sourced organic meals and ingredients. You can choose meal plans like vegetarian, omnivore, paleo, carnivore, or gluten-free, and you get fresh ingredients and recipes sent right to your door. Green Chef saves you time and gives you peace of mind by doing the research for you, selecting organic, sustainable ingredients that are good for you and the environment. And it's pretty tasty. We ate Green Chef dinners all last week, and we really like them a lot. Green Chef is offering Mom and Dad Are Fighting listeners 4, count them, 4 free meals with your first order at greenchef.com/momanddad. That's 4 free meals, greenchef.com/momanddad. Let's move on to recommendations. Allison, what do you got?
Okay, since you loved my recommendation of quiche maybe 6 months ago, I have another dish to recommend in the Benedict repertoire.
Go, I want to hear it. Go.
I'm going to recommend haroset as a year-round dish. Do you know what haroset is?
I do not. I'm so goyish.
Well, you already understood that it was a Jewish
I could
thing.
Tell by the look you gave me that I would never understand.
Haroset is a chunky paste-like.
A hunky paste-like.
Food made of nuts and apples that we eat at the Passover Seder. Have you ever been to a Passover Seder?
I have, but I was really little, so I don't remember much
okay.
about it.
So you eat it at the Seder to symbolize the mortar. It's supposed to be like the mortar that the Israelites used to build the pyramids for their Egyptian overlords. But it's also delicious and sweet and a really great dish for kids. My kids, who don't like anything, really love haroset. It's just apples, honey, what else is in it? Apples, honey, nuts, wine. I'm going to put my mom's recipe on our Facebook page. But
Myra Benedict's haroset.
Yes. You can eat it on matzah, but you can also, your kids can eat it with a spoon or on crackers or with cheese. It's just a good, and we had a great interfaith Seder this past weekend, and all of the non-Jews, that's what we call them, non-Jews, which I always think is like a weird thing.
Yeah.
Like everyone's either Jewish or a non-Jew.
Right, sure.
Anyway, but all the non-Jews at the Seder, which outnumbered the Jews, commented that and their kids loved it and commented that haroset was like a great thing to just make all year round. So I'm recommending it.
I cannot wait to make Myra Benedict's haroset at our house to see what my kids think.
Okay.
Hopefully they're not anti-Semitic. All right. So I also have a simple recipe recommendation. It's inspired by a scene in The Meddler. In the movie, Susan Sarandon's character makes at one point like a very simple dish that I had completely forgotten even existed, although I ate it a lot when I was a kid, which is toad in a hole. Do you know about toad in a hole?
That's the egg in the toast?
Yes, that's very simple. So you just take a piece of bread, you use a cookie cutter or a glass to cut a hole out of the middle, then you fry it in a pan and you crack and fry an egg in the middle of it. Then you flip it over and... I just forgot, like, that is a thing, that a way to do breakfast for dinner that's different from the breakfast for dinner that we sometimes do. And I made it for Lyra a couple of days ago, and she was just like delighted by the process. Like, and I remember when I was a kid being delighted by the seemingly simple to me now, but endlessly weird process of cutting a hole in bread and then cracking an egg right in the middle of it. What? But anyway, she just thought it was cool. And she'll, it's not like she doesn't eat eggs otherwise, but it was like a fun way to present it. So, and I hadn't thought about toad in a hole in 35 years.
Is breakfast for dinner a thing that everybody does and call, I mean, everybody calls it breakfast for dinner? I thought that was just like my name.
No, I think everybody
breakfast for dinner.
Yes, and they say it's breakfast for dinner. Okay. Yeah, it's breakfast for dinner. Yeah, I think everyone who's as bad of a parent as we are does breakfast for dinner and calls it breakfast for dinner. Some people just do dinner for dinner and then lord it over the rest of us. All right, that's our show. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/momanddadarefighting to respond to the episode, to see links to things we talked about, to get Myra Benedict's recipe for haroset, and to yell at Allison about whatever. Email us at momanddad@slate.com with suggestions for future topics. Thank you to our producer, Ann Hepperman, to our intern, Shiva Bayat. Thanks to Slate podcast guru, Steve Lichtai, and Panoply Big Cheese, Andy Bowers. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is part of the Panoply Network. Check out our shows at itunes.com/panoply. Thanks to our guests, Susan Sarandon, Jessamine Molly, and the many Slatesters who shared stories of their moms. Thank you, Allison.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening.